I'm Ted Baker, and this is the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast, episode 82, looking back at a 12-7 loss to St. Joseph's at Boswell Field this past Saturday, and another A-10 game with High Point this Saturday at home at 12 noon. We're joined by the head coach of the Statesman, Greg Raymond. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ted.
I want to start with a positive here. Let's talk about Ellis Wilson making 18 saves in goal. In fact, when you have 18 saves and the other guys have 7, you almost always win. We'll talk about why that didn't happen. But just talk about his progression as a goalie this year. He's really stepped up in some spots.
Yeah, he has. And Teddy's had to fight back from some difficult scenarios, for sure. I think he's been taken out of some games. For reasons that we've talked about on the podcast here, just some ways to maybe change the landscape of the game or to get an opponent's offense to think a little differently. But either way, no matter what the reason or rationale is for taking a goalie out of a game, that that takes a pretty strong-willed person to bounce back and have some fortitude to play a better game the following week, to play a better game the following game. And, you know, we're very proud of what Ellis did from Richmond to St. Joe. I think the week we put him through was challenging and tough, and he responded well and had a good game.
We talk a lot about 60 minutes, and this was another one of those games. You called timeout, down 4-0 in the first. They got one more goal in the second, and then you played him even for 52 minutes, but it's just not enough.
Yeah, you know, Ted, there were a lot of things about that game, and specifically on the offensive end, where and not just from a scenario where we're not creating great opportunities, we're making some poor decisions with the ball in our stick, the things that have plagued us in some of these conference games or some games all season. You know, I think that the offense has seen clearly in this specific game what a lack of some offensive output or some, like I said, some faulty decision making does to the defensive end. You know, I think one of the biggest keys of our game plan was making sure St. Joe's didn't have great effect from end to end, and creating scoring opportunities through substitutions. It's one place where St. Joe's is great, where, you know, they have an excellent attack that loves to create scoring in 3-on-3s and 4-on-4s, where you're attempting to sub off the field and get some defensive personnel on from a midfield standpoint. And they capitalized on 4 of those opportunities, which, you know, essentially is the difference in the game, where our defense is playing pretty well. We're mixing and matching some different schemes that slowed them down a little bit. We feel like they're very athletic and can create some great scoring, but we felt like they were great when they had more space to operate and in an early defensive standpoint. So that age-old saying that I keep bringing up on this podcast, the complimentary lacrosse, you know, the time of possession that we needed to win that game, we didn't accomplish. And the fight for possessions was very underwhelming. And you know, in some places we kind of hung the defense out to dry, and in other places we just honestly didn't score the ball when our hands are free. We have one-on-ones with the goalie, and we're you're still plagued with the correct shooting or finishing these shooting opportunities or scoring opportunities. You know, we have 4 point blank scoring chances that we don't capitalize on, and then we go 0-for in a man-up scenario, and that's, you know, in our opinion, the difference in the game. So, you know, I just I feel like the message that we have been sending or have attempted to send hasn't gotten through as clearly as we needed it to. So, the challenges that we provided Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday of this week were more exact, with a very distinct point of view and, you know, a stern discipline. So I believe that our offense is in a place where we can see how a lack of execution can affect both ends of the field. So moving on, we have to believe that, you know, the changes that we're making, that we have made or attempted to week to week, that they really do make an impact on how these guys prepare for the game mentally, the visualization they have going into the game, and what we need to do in order to be successful on both ends of the field. Because right now, one end isn't helping the other. And whether it's a defensive stop into a faulty clear, or it's an offensive turnover into a terrible transition into the defensive end. So we're spending a lot of time on both, and we have all year. And I got to believe that, you know, with the morale and the consistency that our guys show, that we'll have a better impact on all of those scenarios this coming week.
It seems to me like when you've been at your best offensively this year, it's been off passing the ball. For example, the Lemoyne game where you got 20 goals. And when you try to dodge, it just doesn't seem like you have real good dodgers. Is that fair to say, that you're going to have to pass the ball to score?
Yeah, but we're also going to need to dodge better. You know, I think we had a game plan, and we always do, of what off-ball movement and ball movement looks like, you know. And I think there are scenarios where we don't dodge from a physical nature, and we're trying to run around people rather than creating contact, getting out with our feet, you know, making sure that the fundamentals of our ball movement are paramount, and our guys lose sight of attention to detail. And that's completely on our coaching staff. We've got to continue. What we've learned with this team is, when we don't send a specific message each week, you know, what we hope is, you know, we kind of give that reference of that that game you always played at a carnival or a circus or a fair, where you're bopping the head on those moles and you're putting them back into the hole, where we like to think that once we knock a mole back into that hole, that we fixed it, corrected it, and moved on. And that's just not what this team's doing. We talk about physical dodging a lot, and we talk about how to create and draw slides and then move the ball. So if we're going to play effective offense, Ted, we can't just move the ball. We have to be able to beat people. We have to be able to make great decisions after we beat those people. And again, another challenge we've provided to this team this week is, if we're not going to dodge physically, and we're not going to dodge with a tougher mentality, then we're not going to play effective offense.
How do you feel like you handled the 10-man ride? It was, I've never seen one where the goalie comes out as far. And I mean, at one point you threw a pass right down the field to him. Other times you almost had the one goal where he was out and then came sprawling back in to make the stop. Overall, how was that execution against the 10-man?
Not bad, not good. You know, I think where a 10-man really starts to grind you down is as the game goes on. And, you know, you have a different fitness that all teams do, you know, from the first quarter to the fourth. And, you know, how much defense have you played? Who's got the ball in their stick and clearing it? You know, that has an effect as the game goes on. And you know, unfortunately, you try to draw things up from a, here are your looks, these are the vision standpoints. They change ride to ride. And they change on based on the scenario of the defense. Was it a shot save, a turnover, an end line? How did we get the ball back? And then once we attack that 10-man ride, you know, what side is the ball on? There's a lot of different parts to how the defense rotates for St. Joe's, how the goalie rotates in and out of the goal, and what the timing of those open goal shots can look like, or the deep pass can look like. So, you know, at times we had a very balanced head on our shoulders, and we had great vision of the field. And at times we made impulsive decisions and, you know, guessed a little bit rather than reading the ride and making plays after the fact. So, you know, that's another, you know, that's kind of equivalent to the ride we had against Colgate. It's, you know, a ton of upfront pressure with a lot of speed and a lot of length in the middle of the field. They've got some defensemen that are very big, very long, and move really well. So, you know, our thought after seeing that film is, as the game went on, the decision making became a little bit more hesitant. And, you know, I think that that possession battle, when we talked about the time of possession with them and how important that clear could be, was, you know, I think we clear the ball. I think we have four failed clears throughout the course of the day. And, you know, I think if we were to say that, you know, as effective as this ride's been, I mean, teams are clearing the ball at about 70% against St. Joe, and we're a little bit better than that. So I think if you were to tell me that we were going to hold this team to 12 goals and clear the ball at about, you know, 82 to 85%, that the time of possession would be in our favor. But, you know, with the ride and all the elements there, where we lose the game, Ted, is on the ground. And I think the most disappointing part of this competition in particular was, we feel like we got out toughed. We feel like they played tougher brand of lacrosse on Boswell Field, which is something that we claim to take great pride in, but our men didn't. And again, another fault to the coaching staff. We need to find a better way to communicate what wins these games, so that our guys recognize that if you get out ground balled at the capacity that we did against St. Joe's, we aren't going to win. And so the toughness factor, the physicality that you need against a team like that was not there. Whether it was in that ride as the game went on, or specifically on the face-off wings, we thought our face-off wings were terrible, and really kind of hung Adam Shea out to dry a couple times. And from a ground ball scenario in the offensive end, it was abysmal. I mean, it was St. Joe's crowding a ball and swarming it, as we say, and our guys not putting as much ownership into what kind of effort you need in order to pick the ball up off the ground and then possess it afterwards. So the ride was effective for them. We did an okay job with it, but we lost this game on the ground, and we lost the toughness battle in a way that, you know, frankly, has our coaching staff in a mode where we are in a very challenging aspect towards the next step of this team. And that has carried us into this week. And our message has been as clear as it can be about what toughness looks like during game day, what physicality looks like during game day, and what playing with pride, how visible that can be. And unfortunately, you wouldn't see it enough.
I want to acknowledge Adam Shea. He became the program's all-time leading face-off win man in terms of number of wins. I mean, he has faced off, I think it's 1,120 times in his career. That's a lot of times to get the snot beaten out of you.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that the ironic part of him breaking this record is, you know, it's probably one of his one of his worst games. And, you know, he still did a pretty good job. And so, you know, I think Adam wants a lot of different opportunities back after he's won a few faceoffs. And again, I think our team wants to be able to support him better after he wins a few faceoffs. So, you know, I think, as always, we're very proud of Adam. I'm not shocked that he's broken this record. You know, he's out there enough and has been enough over the course of these 5 years to be in these record books, you know. And even if he wasn't breaking records and number one all time on ground balls and faceoff wins, we'd still be very grateful for his efforts.
I want to acknowledge a couple of other guys. Shea's battled injuries. Another one is Nicky Galais. He was back throwing his body all around the field, had a couple of caused turnovers. And I thought Brooks Ryan, you were talking about toughness, I thought those two guys played pretty tough Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it's okay to spend a little time on Nick here. You know, Nick is a very unassuming player. There's not a lot to his game that shows flash or that you know, ends up in the newspaper or, you know, these godforsaken Twitter feeds or social media accounts. You know, Nick's a guy that, you know, Ted, it had two shoulder surgeries in 1 year. And, you know, was a starter as a freshman and went through a really tough 2-year patch where he just wasn't healthy. I mean, that's two full years of not being yourself. And, you know, with the landscape of what Division I lacrosse looks like, all Division I athletics, all athletics in general at the college level, I mean, to find that the grass is greener or that someplace may be easier, or what does the transfer portal look like? Or, you know, I don't need to continue to go through this. This is just a lot. It's a lot to fight, and I could make my life easier by doing this or that. Nick has not, and he's returned. He got his shoulders and body as healthy as he could over this past summer. He gained his weight back. He gained his strength back. And in turn has been voted a captain, and is as resilient of a player as we could have, you know. So with the lack of success we're having this season, it doesn't change how proud I am of him. And to be fully transparent, we need more of that underdog mentality. Does he always play great or make the right plays? No. Couldn't be happier with a guy that has kept the Hobart jersey on, been too proud to wear it to move on to a different or a greener pasture, and has fought to be the leader of this program and a true underdog. So every time he's on the field, you can see representation of the commitment and the pride and the toughness that we want in a Hobart lacrosse player. And Brooks is going to be a great one, man. He's just you know, Brooksy or Rhino, whatever we want to call him, he is, you know, he's got the most stoic personality. It's become, you know, kind of a comical thing around the office and the team. I mean, he is a yes coach, or sure, or hey, Brooks, we want to use you on the wings this week. Sounds good. He's like, I haven't done it much, so I'm going to need to watch some film and you guys coach me up. And we say, yep, we'll do it. And he's covered the other team's best off ball player the majority of these games. And, you know, we say it in film sessions most week is, you know, Brooks, you don't look like a first year athlete here, man. You look like you have great experience and also a great level of toughness. So he can also come off the field after a mistake and you can look him right in the eyes and say, hey, this is what you have to do better. And he looks you right back and says, yeah, coach, you got it. And very rarely does he make the same mistakes in a row, but he is a tough player. And the good part is he's big, he's long, and he's got some good strength, and adds us an element on ball and off ball that we don't have a ton of from a length perspective and a very savvy, you know, off ball, intuitive gap play defensive mentality. So proud of him. And you're going to be seeing him and hearing a lot of him through the next 4 years here. He's a good one.
All right, let's talk about the ultimate positive. And I always get tripped up on these 8-way tiebreaker scenarios and stuff. But for the most part, if you win these last two, it looks like you're in and everything resets.
Yeah, you know, it's a tricky situation, Ted. You know, we're in a position this week where I believe, as the head coach of this program, that if we focus on what a win could mean for the postseason, then we're not going to do it. We've passed the message on from a conference scenario. And if you rewind to after the Syracuse game, where, you know, we, again, fought very hard at times, dropped the ball for about literally and figuratively for about 8 minutes and gave a great team momentum and let, you know, the number four team in the country escape Boswell Field when we had him trapped. I came into the locker room and said, I believe we're very ready for this conference. And I believe we've gone through a calloused mode of a tough regular season schedule. And it didn't go the way we'd liked. But now we're in a position where we can compete in conference and make a strong push for an Atlantic 10 postseason and Atlantic 10 championship. And since we have not done so, we have found ways to lose. And I believe that because of the messages that I've sent or that we've sent, once again, I always tell you, Ted, if this team's not playing the way we want them to play, then it's our fault completely. But I believe they've been outcome driven. I think they've been living in the red. And instead of staying in the blue and trusting our process and being a process team throughout a course of a game, not just a week. You know, the frustrating part with these guys is they fight hard each week. I keep telling you that. And you know, the practice we had at Richmond, the Friday before Richmond, was, I mean, a banger of a practice, man. It was so sharp. And I don't think we dropped one ball. I don't think there was one mistake. We, Coach Brundage and I are looking at each other and saying, you know, we're going to fight our butts off tomorrow. And it just didn't happen. So, you know, I think we continue to fall into these traps of what does the outcome look like if we play well? And we're not going to do it again this week. Now it's going to be up to them to process these messages and to play with a different approach. We can lead the horses to water all we want, but it's going to be their decision to take a drink, you know, and I know that this is a group of men that wants to win and wants to go to the postseason. There's no doubt in our mind about that. But are we in a position mentally so that our bodies and our behavior can perform in a way that we haven't yet? So this week's got to be about something different. Because of the lack of pride and toughness and physicality that we played with last week, when we talked about, hey, can't win three games unless you win one. And if we win, we can do everything that we wanted to do and talked about, despite all the ailments, the bumps and bruises, and the majority of downs this season, we can still do all the things we set out to do when we started in September. And the performance didn't show that type of desperation. It didn't show that type of fight. I mean, we talk about fighting, and Saturday we felt like, I mean, we're playing rope-a-dope and just taking punches instead of actually toe-to-toe in a ring, throwing them, getting knocked down, getting back up, knocking them down, expecting them to get back up. Saturday against St. Joe's wasn't a fighter's mentality. It was we were hanging on. And that's not the way I want this team to play. I'd rather lose and put our best foot forward from what pride looks like standpoint. So we go into this game. It's our senior week. Our seniors that I talk about constantly, and they know we don't do anything without their leadership, without their experience. That's the way we structure our culture. And we've worked very hard to make this culture strong. That's why this team continues to bounce back and we continue to enjoy coaching them, because we've developed a great climate here. And we've had problems this year for all the right reasons, if that makes any sense. All the ailments we faced with the guys that are on the sideline and in the game, and different elements of weather and sickness and, you know, things that just continue to disrupt our weeks. Our guys fight through those things. Now, with that being said, this senior class has done a ton. The fourth-year seniors fought through a pandemic. I've told you before, Ted, they lost their senior year of high school. They didn't play that year. Their freshman year of their first year of college was a small shell of what going to college and playing Division I athletics even looks like. We play a six-game season that year, and they're locked in their dorms, or they're locked in quarantine for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Or we had a couple guys that year, first-year athletes, that were in quarantine for almost 4 weeks in a row, just sitting in a hotel room, getting food delivered and probably pulling their hair out. And they stayed. They stayed here this whole time. They've worn a Hobart jersey this whole time. That's good loyalty, and that deserves focus. And our fifth-year guys, through a landscape, like I just said, of transfer portal or where can I go or, you know, what else is out there, they're here. We have five of them that are here. A couple of them don't even play much on game day, and they are still going at it. And we have a couple of them that have fought injury all season long. So they come back for a fifth year, and it just doesn't go the way they want it to. And Johnny's a captain. He's here. He doesn't have a helmet on during game day, and he's leading. He's fighting. He's given everything that he's got from an emotional standpoint. That promotes family and love more than I can really put into words. So this game is about them. It's about pride in our culture, how we structure the hierarchy of this family, and what we ask them to do. And if we're battling for the postseason, we've already proven that we don't do that well. That if we're outcome driven, that we don't play well. We play tight, we play soft, and we play in a way that needs explanation rather than shows answer. And so this game is going to be about one game. We're not playing High Point this week. They are gray faces, man. Nameless gray faces that we need to look through the opponent. We need to look through the outcome or what the outcome might be or might provide in the postseason. And we need to play for Hobart Lacrosse. We need to play for this culture, and we need to play for our seniors. And that's the focus that we have right now.
Well put. We are going to talk about the faceless High Point, though, just a little bit. They remind me a lot of St. Joe's. They're a team, they're very good at the faceoff X. They lead the league, and they're another team, 14-13 loss at their place in the rain last year. They strike me as another team that really wants to strike in transition and off subs and really get going up and down the field.
Yeah, no doubt. They're a very good team. They face off well. They've got an excellent offense. They've got one offensive player that I think has more points than maybe anybody in our conference. He is an excellent finisher. He's an excellent rider. He's excellent on the ground. I could talk about them for days in terms of what they're capable of. I think aside from the points that I just made, they're in the same position we are. So, there isn't any opponent out there really that feels sorry for Hobart or, well, they need to win to go to the postseason, so let's not put forth our best effort. That just doesn't happen in competitive athletics. So they will play very hard. They always do. They will be able to make plays. They have great athletes in between the lines. They can split and shoot on the run well. They have two-handed guys. They have great one-handed guys. They have the capability of playing a great game. I mean, you see what they do against North Carolina. They get a big North Carolina win. They score, I think, 11 goals in a row. You see them compete in the Dome where they go on a 7-8 goal run. They got guys. There's no doubt about it. So there's an element of this where we could tell our team, hey, they're in the same position we are. They need to win in order to get into this tournament. If they don't, they only have one conference win. And then they go into next week where they have to play another great Atlantic 10 team. That will probably be in a very similar scenario. So the outcome for us and for High Point is virtually identical. But knowing that they're good or that they run this or that they run that, I mean, every team we've played, essentially, you know, with the exception of maybe one or two, we've had that same message that if we don't, then they will. And so, again, I think the approach to this thing will be different for Hobart, but we have no doubt in our mind that they can play early offense. They can run the field. They can make saves. They can pressure defensively. They also 10-man ride. They got a lot of things that can sway the winning pendulum in their favor. So our guys need to prepare for the game, of course. But prepare for their opponent, of course, but also stay more focused on what the process for Hobart looks like.
And that's how you win. I mean, that's instead of saying this is what we have to do to make the postseason, you tell the guys, get this ground ball, win this faceoff, take this next shot well, do that, and then at the end of the day, you look up and guess who's ahead on the scoreboard.
No doubt, Ted. You could come give our pregame speech. It's been, you know, maybe with, you know, a few louder words or this, that. It's been that way, you know, week to week. What are the details you can stack up into your performance? And what, you know, I think that, you know, we've changed that message to, you know, watching guys that are trying to make plays that aren't within the realm of our preparation that we haven't done before. And we're saying we've deemed this now not a great effort play that's a bad decision. This is becoming selfish, where you're trying to do things on your own that we haven't asked you to do. And you haven't focused a ton on what a ground ball does mean, what great stick work and fundamentals means, what a great approach on the ball does, what forward play, nothing off your back foot, what all of these things. If we stack all those up, you know, we're talking about momentum. And again, I think because of the mind of this athlete that has spent too much time on an outcome. They've neglected the things that are effective in our process. So you said it well, buddy. There won't be a victory if our guys can't focus on those details that do win.
All right, let's watch it happen this Saturday. Coach, thanks as always.
Thanks, Ted.
That's head coach Greg Raymond. It'll be Hobart and High Point, 12 noon Saturday at Boswell Field on Senior Day for the Statesman. Of course, you can get this podcast wherever you find podcasts, Apple and Google and Spotify, and get all your Hobart and William Smith athletics information at hwsathletics.com. Till next week, have a great lacrosse week.